Welcome to the Power Factor Show. Episode 109.
Hi, welcome to Power Factor. I'm Larry.
And I'm Rick.
And today we're going to talk about my first IDPA experience.
Yeah.
And so, unfortunately, Rick couldn't be there this time, but the weather was good enough, and I had some other friends that were that invited me to go out, and I said, well, Rick, can you make it? No, I couldn't make it. So I said, what the heck, I'll go with some other friends of mine that were also SOs and well-versed in IDPA and stuff like that. So
you had some good help at the range.
Definitely had some tips, and I got spanked a few times for doing things wrong, and you'll see that.
That's par for the course.
If you're unaware, back in, let's just say September. I don't remember which episode number, but it was the cover episode where you invited me to try out IDPA for the first time.
Right.
It just took a few months for it to happen. I was studying for my exam, and then when the one match came up that we wanted to do, it was a classifier match, and I was kind of like...
That wouldn't have taught you anything.
That wouldn't be very interesting, I didn't think, for the viewers. I mean, I was familiar with what the classifier was all about.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I wanted to shoot a real match, because this was kind of, to me anyway, at the time, I was treating it as kind of a stunt for the Power Factor Show. It was like, you know, here's a way we can get an episode out to the viewers and kind of be fun, but I didn't really expect to like it all that much. So I was just going to, let's just do it one time, and that'll be it. And since it's going to be just one time, I don't really want it to be the classifier match.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
Because that's kind of
well,
boring,
and the classifier
right?
match, as we've discussed on the show in the past, isn't really a reflection of what you see at a match. I mean, you know, you fired 90 rounds in the classifier, and only, what, like 18 of them were fired from cover or something?
You know, I think you're right.
And shooting from cover really is what IDPA is
or
all
maybe
about.
Maybe 24, something like that.
Yeah, but the first two strings on stage three. So you fire six
from the
and
barricade.
Six, and then six and go to the barrel. Then, yeah, so it's like 24 rounds.
And then another barrel.
Yeah, the last 24 rounds are shot from the barrel. But in a typical match, you're going to shoot, if it's a 100-round match, probably 90 rounds are going to be fired from cover. So it's really important, I think, if you want the match experience, that you shoot a regular match instead of the classifier.
Right. And I thought it was interesting, after that episode back in September, one of our viewers wrote in and said, oh, I can't wait to see what Larry thinks of IDPA. And I was thinking, it's just a stunt. We're just going to do it. And one time, you know, that's about it. And because I had friends that were into IDPA for a long, long time. And I'd read the rules many times online to see if I could figure it out and just kind of like, what's this game all about? And I got done reading the rules, kind of scratching my head, going, I don't, from an RO's perspective, or SO, I don't know how I would officiate this match. I don't really understand, and it seems kind of silly. You know, I mean, some of the subjectiveness of the rules.
Yeah.
And so, so I had the opportunity to go out. This match was filmed in late November, and to be honest, I had a blast. I really, really liked it, and I was surprised that I liked it. So, we got some match video to show you, but I guess first we could talk about equipment. True to IDPA's spirit, I shot my carry gun, which actually I have right here, and we've cleared. This is a bone stock, pretty much bone stock Glock 19. Nothing fancy about it at all. This is the first gun I ever bought. Still have it. Don't ever plan to get rid of it. It is a Generation 3,
So it's got the finger grooves and the light rail?
So the Generation 3 means it's got the finger grooves and the light rail.
Okay.
However, after talking with Steve, and he likes his Glock 19 so much, and we were kind of comparing notes and what have you, he tells me this is really called a Generation 2.5, because it's such an early Gen 3 gun. It has a real square beaver tail as compared to modern ones, which are more rounded.
Okay.
And it's only a two-pin frame. There's the pin that holds the trigger housing, and there's one pin right here, which is a trigger pin.
Okay.
And shortly after this was made, they started putting a third pin in the locking block up here. But so,
okay.
I don't know. It is what it is. I didn't think there was anything special about it, but some of my friends have since gone, oh, wow, that's a 2.5. That's an old Glock 19.
That was just slightly less perfect than a 3. which is slightly less perfect yet than a four, right?
I suppose. I like the Generation 3 quite a lot, honestly. But anyway, this is basically exactly as I got it. It's got night sights on it. They're not good. They're not the greatest sights at all, but they still glow from 1998 when I bought the gun. The only thing I've got done to it, it's got a extended mag button from a Glock 35.
Which is legal because it's from a Glock 35.
Which is legal, and it's explicitly written that way in the rule book. They explicitly mention the Glock series as one example of how you can swap those parts. And I've got a little grip plug in it, which, I don't know, for whatever, you know, it's supposed to keep dirt out of the trigger mechanism, and it kind of sort of smooths out your reloads. It's a little $5 part that I've had in there for many, many years. And I shot it as is, as I carry it, bone stock, basically. The trigger, 5.5 pounds, and it's got, you know, a heavy break to it. And so, and it was a lot of fun. I shot with a, the holster I carry every day is a paddle, it's called a Kaitac, that's my other one. It's called an Itac, Israeli defense something something, I don't know, made in Israel, injection molded paddle holster, nothing fancy. Stays on the belt real well, and I like it a lot. Yeah. Little $20 thing. In fact, you know what? I bought that holster 4 years ago when the same friend of mine said, hey, there's an IDPA match in No Carver. You want to go check it out? And I said, yeah, sure, what the heck? And my family was out of town. No, I actually did. So I went and I bought this real quick. Hey, I need something for a Glock 19 that's legal for IDPA. And then we went up there, and it turned out to be a classifier match. So you 4 years ago...
That's pretty weird. Because I mean,
it was just a classifier. There was no extra stages.
Clubs are required to run one classifier match a year.
Okay.
And so you just happened to run into the one match that each club had in that year.
Yeah. The first time I tried 4 years ago, and then this year in September, well, 2012 in September, again, classifier. So anyway, I did shoot a classifier kind of sort of unofficially, just one time, quick and dirty, a long time ago with a gun I hadn't shot very much, and I still hadn't shot it very much. That was actually one of the appeals to me. What I enjoyed so much was shooting the gun I carry, and because I don't shoot it that much. As for mag pouch, I just used, I've got a CompTac double mag pouch, which is actually kind of a quad mag pouch. I showed it in the previous episode, 107. Somewhere around the 15 minute mark. It's a quad mag pouch, and there's two outboard mags that's all racy and stuff for USPSA, but you just take those off and it just becomes a kind of a regular double mag pouch, which you know, I checked all the rules and all stuff, and it covers the mag for, what is it, 2 inches?
Yep.
And it's like exactly perfect at 2 inches. I put a little pencil mark on my mag and measured it.
Oh, see.
So I think they made it with that in mind anyway
I find that, you know, the rules when they were written reflected the gear that was for sale. It's not like they made up these bizarre rules for equipment and then everybody had to scramble around making equipment to comply.
Right.
You know, the most mag pouches covered 2 inches, so that was the rule, covers 2 inches, you know.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, it's like the rules reflect, and that's, you know, not to get too far afield, but like that's one of the reasons people question, you know, how come if you have a gun, let's say a 1911 with a 4 1/4 inch barrel, it has to have a bushing. But if it has a 4 inch barrel, it doesn't have to have a bushing. Well, that's because in 1996, all the 1911s on the market with a 4 1/4 inch barrel had bushing barrels.
Okay. And all that's just the way they were
built. That's the way they were built then.
Okay.
And all the guns then shorter than that, officers' models and stuff, a lot of those had bushingless barrels. So the rules reflect the gun market. It's not like they just came up with these, dreamed up these rules that then the gun companies
expected people
had to scramble
catch up.
Around to comply with.
Sure. Okay.
The rules reflect what was on the market at the time.
Cool. So, of course, for this match, I shot SSP, unclassified, as a non-member, whatever, my first match that you're allowed to do without being a member, right?
Right.
So, so that's what we did there. And they had, they had 6 stages, and we're going to go through them, I guess. Are you ready to do that?
I'm ready. Let's see.
Okay.
Let's see what you did.
Yeah, let's see. Let's see. What did I do here?
Now, we're going to see them in the order in which you shot them.
We can.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I brought up in your tracking match performance was how did your performance improve over the course of the day?
Right.
So if we shoot them in order, let's see if, let's say on the first stage you had 5 mics and 3 procedurals, but on the last stage you won, that would be an indication that you were kind of learning and picking up on things as you went along.
I definitely did better over time. So this was the first stage we shot. This was stage three of the day, actually.
Good camera work there. Oh, no, there we go. Okay.
You start by, there's two targets on the left, and there's two targets on the right. They had a timer malfunction here. There was like an 80-second part-time set. And so, as I'm getting ready, the beeps. Anyway.
Here he goes. Transition. That's it, huh? Eight rounds?
That was it.
Wow.
So, a little short. Quick and dirty for my first stage. That was nice. I didn't have to think about reloads. I just... Right. And it was... Actually, so what they had was two... I think I got this right. It's been a little while. So I think there was two dogs on the left of the wall, which were two shots each. I could be wrong. Actually, there was a dog over there that was just kind of in the mix, and you didn't have to shoot it, and it didn't matter if you shot it. It was just kind of there as a prop more than anything. So there was actually two regular IDPA targets requiring two shots each to the left of the wall, the first four shots I took. And then you come around to the right of the wall, and there was two more targets that they said only one shot was required each. Well, I had two shots just ingrained in my mind. It's
sure
everybody gets two.
Now,
was
there something unusual about those targets? Why they required only one? I mean, was there something
Maybe it was just to mix it up. I kind of sort of remember the scenario was your housekeeper was at home and these guys broke in and there was this
with their dogs
and they had a dog or maybe your dog got out. I don't remember exactly, but there was something to do with the housekeeper that we were trying to save, and that was the second position there.
But they weren't headshots or anything unusual.
No,
it was just only one each.
They were not headshots, anything unusual like that. So I remember shooting the no shoot. I shot my nanny or my housekeeper.
There you go. Well, then you got a good introduction to the sport. Did the bullet at least pass through and then also hit the threat target?
In fact, I think it did.
Okay, good. Well,
yeah,
at least you got
hits,
your hits.
I did get my hits.
That's good.
And since it only required one hit each, and I fired two, so I wasted a little time, but I had some insurance shots out there that I didn't intend to do. I wasn't even thinking. I'm like, oh my God, I'm in an IDPA match, and I'm shooting a gun I haven't shot in 4 years.
Now, I noticed when at the start position, you had quite a bit of time to kind of get yourself set up. Were you consciously aware of where that leg came down to the ground
and
where your foot was aligned?
I was absolutely thinking about our cover episode.
Right.
And I was more than anything, I was afraid to break cover throughout this match. And you'll see evidence of that as we go through it.
Right.
So, I don't know. What do you think of that?
It looked good. I mean, yeah, I was noticing you had plenty of time to stand there, you know, and kind of get yourself set up. And I think that's one of the most important things. If the start position is where you're going to fire your first shot, you should have plenty of time to kind of get your feet set and position yourself for that first shot. I mean, I find that sometimes there's discussion about like I'm sure it'll come up in a later stage where you do have a reload, where the rules allow you to use the same amount of cover for reloading as you do for shooting. But I always find that I'm kind of off balance a lot of the time when I'm shooting.
When you're hanging out.
Yeah, and so I'll straighten up to do my reload and lean back out because I don't feel like I can do the reload very well when I'm off balance.
Gotcha. Well, you'll see some evidence of that as well.
Yeah, so on this stage, I mean, it's very straightforward. It looks like you got the job done. And
I was happy to start on that stage. I mean, there was no reloads to think about, just eight shots. Actually, they only required six, so...
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go on to the next one.
Okay,
so this is the second stage that we shot, stage four. This is a from behind these barrels, you can see, and the procedure is, there's three targets, two shots each, and strong hand only from the right side of the barrels, 2, 4, 6, and then...
strong hand or right hand? Because the stage doesn't look like symmetrical, or is it?
Yeah, that's a good point.
It should have been symmetrical if it was going to be strong hand, so that you'd shoot the lefties and shoot stronger on
the other side. Yeah, I don't
think
the targets are the same on either side, but I could be wrong about that.
So I'd say that's a bad course design. You shouldn't have right-handed shooters shooting right-handed with their strong hand, and left-handed shooters shooting right-handed weak hand. It should be strong hand around the strong side, weak hand around the weak side if you're going to do something like that.
So if you're going to do something like that, and call it strong hand, the stage should be mirrored to balance it out.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah,
and I don't recall. But so anyway, I'm shooting with my right hand, 2, 4, 6 on the right, reload, and 2-4-6 on the left, but freestyle only on the left. I'm not. Okay. I don't remember the scenario. I don't remember the reasoning behind that.
Right. I mean, we've already watched it once, and I think it's interesting that normally when you're in a scenario course of fire, as opposed to like a drill or an exercise, the idea behind shooting strong hand or weak hand is that the other hand is disabled. But in this stage, you shoot strong hand and then use both hands to reload,
right,
and then shoot freestyle.
And there
so that's kind of, and you're not holding something in the weak hand.
We weren't holding anything or holding anybody back, or I don't know.
It's kind of like weird. That, so. He doesn't remember, and I never knew what the scenario was, so we're not really sure. But it's just kind of, if you're into stage design, I would say there's a couple of elements here that I wouldn't put into a stage. That being shooting strong hand or weak hand only, and then transitioning to freestyle. You should do it the other way around to simulate one hand becoming disabled.
Right.
And then also the idea that everybody seems to be shooting right-handed around the right side, and then shooting freestyle around the left side definitely favors right-handed shooters. And I'm very much against favoring right-handed shooters.
Of course.
So.
In this case. I find myself, this is my first IDPA reload, right? So I go 2-4-6, and I'm like, okay, well, I want to reload for the other side. And I'm like, crap, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah.
Like, so I did a tack load where I exchanged the magazine, and I put the other one back in my pouch, which was slower, but,
right,
you know, whatever.
Yeah, so. Normally I'd say let the gun run dry and skip having to stow the mag. Don't worry about it. Just let the gun run dry.
Right.
And especially on a stage like this, where since the reload comes during the freestyle aspect of it, it's just a normal reload. You know, let the gun run dry. And don't worry about the retaining the mag. Sometimes you'll have a stage where, let's say, if you've got a reload in a situation where you're holding on to something in the other hand, well, then you've got to put it down and do your reload and pick it up again and stuff.
So maybe you'd want to do it before getting into that
position. If you've got something like what it's going to mess it up, but in this they're inviting you to do the reload in a conventional freestyle engagement.
I guess so
ideally,
but just from my USPSA mindset, I thought, well, let's see, I know I got 5 rounds left in the gun and I got to take 6 shots. Well, I need to stoke it up.
So. Yeah. not a bad way
and
to
I
go.
Went, oh, wait, don't drop that.
Well, and it would it would matter how wide this cover is. If you've got, it's 2 barrels wide, I could probably shoot around both sides without having to really move my feet too much. If it was, say, 6 barels wide, then you have time as you move across to do your tack load, and then it makes a lot more sense.
I see.
Because you're already reloaded when you get there.
Right. You do instead 2 things at once.
Yeah, 2 things at once. And so then it makes more sense. In a situation like this, where you're just transitioning from this side to this side, make more sense to let the gun run dry and just do the slide lock reload.
Right.
I also noticed that you mentioned that you stowed the mag in the pouch.
I did.
Yeah, and that's not terrible, except that someday you will forget to restoke the mag. I at the last IDPA match I shot, a guy empties his gun, draws the mag, fired 2 shot, he's at slide lock again, pulls that mag out, reloads again, fires 2 shots, and he's at slide lock. So he runs out of ammo before he gets
to
the end of the stage.
From the previous stage,
gets a bunch of procedurals because he didn't have his mag stoked up, he didn't fire the required number of rounds, etc., etc., etc.
Didn't neutralize.
Yeah, so don't put the mags back in the pouch.
Right.
Don't do what Larry does.
Right. Hey, newbie mistake, right?
Yeah.
So.
Fire away, literally and figuratively.
All right, check it out.
All right, nice tack load. If you're going to do a tack load, do a nice one.
Slow one.
No, it's good.
Kind of have my tongue hanging out just right, just to coordinate all that.
They look pretty good.
And now,
I can see you guys are looking right into the sun, so all your muzzle smoke is billowing up in front of your eyes.
Right.
And that's one of the things that Steve and I talked about when we were talking about bullet selection and whatnot, is how much smoke there is. And for some reason, this range especially, the sun is rising behind the bays.
Exactly.
In the morning,
getting that. We must be facing east, right?
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, that looked pretty good.
That was pretty good. So you notice the SO was holding up one finger right at the end, and Rick and I reviewed it a couple times, and I don't remember what I did, but...
It must have been something egregious, or he wouldn't have penalized him for
something
it.
Something right at the end. I think it was just being from just being a new guy.
He probably wanted, you were getting cocky probably at that point, you know. So he just wanted to kind of
already by
notch
stage
you
two,
back down again. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay, so stage 5. This was a kind of a bigger stage, actually. We start holding a grocery bag, and I don't know, bad things happen. I don't remember.
You're in a bad part of town, grocery shopping.
Definitely a bad part of town. We'll go ahead and watch the video and see what Rick thinks about this. So, 2 shots from the left side of the wall. Couple shots there. Popper's on the move, which I wasn't moving, so I got a penalty there.
So okay.
I stopped walking during the popper engagement. And then two shots on this last target, which I fired three because I was there. Why not?
So. Well, exactly. Yeah, so it was kind of interesting. So you're holding your groceries, you drop them, and then you move to the cover position.
Right.
And it looked like when you're shooting around the left side, you were crowding a little bit. You were cranked over and kind of distorting your normal shooting position to a greater extent than necessary.
Because I was crowding cover.
Yeah, which essentially. Made me yeah, you're kind of forced into it. Yeah.
The wall
if you just give yourself a little more room, you can stand totally. A little more naturally. Sometimes, though, as the further you get from cover, the more you have to reposition yourself to pie across a widely spaced array.
Okay. Yeah,
so if you stand too far back, you'll have to shuffle
then
your
you'll
feet
be taking
two or three
a couple
times.
Of steps.
Yeah. Yeah. And so
potentially, yeah.
And so sometimes, you know, you'll be in a position where if the shots aren't too difficult, it's easier to just keep cranking around from the initial position than to take the time to shuffle your feet. And you know, just looking at it, I look at it and go, boy, you know, it looks like he's really, you know, kind of cranked over like this to get around the wall. But depending on what you're shooting and how far away it is, if you can shoot it all from that one spot just by kind of doing this, you might be better off than having to shuffle your feet in order to help facilitate, you know, just keeping more upright.
Yeah.
So I'd say it's just, you know, from stage to stage, you're going to have to make that call. In the stage, the episode, that, a couple episodes back where I was demonstrating the order of engagement, I was able to shoot like an El Prez type of array at 10 yards from one spot just by kind of leaning around a little bit, you know, tighter, and that works okay. And if in this situation, you know, that could have been the perfect way to do it. Comments?
So, yeah, anyway, and like I said, we were supposed to be shooting those poppers on the move, and I fired and missed, and I came to a standstill for a quarter second or half a second, and I got called for that shot. So
now there were two white barrels stacked. Was that to prevent you from seeing the targets to be engaged on the move until you'd already left the cover position?
Yes, I think that was to prevent you seeing from position two targets that you would engage from position three.
Because I noticed you'd already moved, you dropped your grocery bag, gone to the first cover position, shot around the left side, shot around the right side, then you emerge from cover to engage targets on the move.
Poppers, yeah.
Yeah, and that is actually contrary to what the rules addendum says.
Okay.
The rules addendum says you will only be engaging on the move from an initial position in the open
if you are initially
to a position
in the open.
Of cover. Because the idea is, but then they kind of work around it a little bit by putting those barrels out there that prevent you from seeing them from cover.
So
but then once you step out, you could argue that the barrels now become the cover.
Right.
So you should have stopped, engaged from the barrel, and then moved on. But if the procedure says shoot on the move, shoot on the move.
Just
I wouldn't stop and argue with the guy with the clock running.
I wasn't going to argue with anybody.
Yeah, the stage design probably should have been moved the first wall and made it the second wall so that your initial move was drop the grocery bag, engage the poppers on the move to the first position, and then continue on from there. Now, had you ever shot through a target with the hole in it like that?
That was the first time. And that's why I fired three. I was like, I just want to make sure in case one was in the cardboard that I put two through the hole.
One of the things that you see frequently in IDPA that you don't see much in USPSA is your almost contact distance to a target. And if the target's already got 25 holes in it, when you fire a shot, you're going to blow all the tape off.
Oh, yes.
So you cut the middle out. And then the safety officer's got to keep an eye on it. But the assumption is the rounds pass through the middle if you don't see any holes in the target.
Right.
But what I find is I am used to focusing on the target.
I hear you.
And when I see that hole, my eye is kind of going like this.
Yeah, like what do I?
Because all I'm seeing is this airspace and this berm, you know, is another 10 feet beyond the target. So for me, it's really kind of disconcerting, and I don't like to shoot at those targets.
You know,
I have this sense that I'm going to miss them, even though my muzzle is 3 feet away from the target.
I'm about to have a newbie crazy idea, but why not just put a piece of cardboard 2 feet past that, just so we have something to look at through the hole?
You could do that. You certainly could do that. I mean, I would just as soon do it that way, because I like having that. Yeah. I like having that surface that's at the same on the same plane as the target to focus on. Because just seeing that hole in there,
yeah, it was a little strange. And I came around there real fast and just ripped off 3 shots, and just to kind of make sure if I was in the paper, I made sure 2 of them passed through the hole at least.
Yeah,
so,
that's good. Yeah, so, there's nothing wrong with firing extra shots. Yeah, right. I mean, if you got them on board, you know, and I'll find sometimes that I'll just get to the end of a stage, and let's say I reload in order to fire 2 more shots. So I've got 9 rounds in the gun, and I only need to fire 2. Might as well shoot 9. You know, I mean, why haul all those rounds around with
it's
you?
Just
you
time.
Know? Yeah, yeah. So sometimes, you know, I mean, and that's one of the things too about mixing up the round count is you can shoot match after match after match, and every target's engaged with 2 rounds. And I don't like to get. I think that's kind of a rut. You know,
right.
You're conditioning yourself
you're conditioning,
to firing 2.
Right. And the first stage I shot, they told us fire 1 at these targets, and I just shot 2 because I'm just so used to shooting 2.
Yeah, so see, that's a bad habit.
99% of the time, we fire 2 in these games.
So I like to see stages, you know, where one stage, every shot, gets, every target gets 2, the next stage, every target gets 3, and the next one, I mean, if every target got 6, that'd be fine with me, so.
Right. Okay, stage 6, I'm going to have some questions for Rick on this one. We'll go ahead and watch it here.
Let's see.
So we start real close to the target. This one is a no-shoot, non-threat, and we've got to go tactical sequence.
Right.
Over to position 2, we've got 2, 4, 6 shots with another non-threat across the range, and then up to position 3, popper falls and pulls up the final target.
Okay.
So questions I have for Rick. First of all, what do you think of that? I don't know.
It's a kind of a cool stage. I mean, I like that.
It's fun.
You've got some lateral movement or kind of uprange movement in this case, but it's just sort of like it could have been lateral if you just rotated it. You know, I mean, you're moving along the wall, getting far enough away at the end for the 10-yard engagement on the steel.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And I like stages that simulate getting. Extricating yourself from a situation.
Right.
So you start with these 2 initial threats up close, and then you're essentially getting the heck out of Dodge kind of a thing. And those are the stages that I think are, you know, you can argue that any situation you run into on the street could go down any way, you never know. But I like the stages where the impression is that you've got yourself into something that you're trying to get out of again.
Right.
And so in that sense, I like the stage setup a lot, that backing up while you're engaging, and then additional threats as you back away.
I could see that. That's good. My question on that was, I had a question for the SO, and first I asked my friend that was an SO, and then I asked the SO running the stage, and he went back to ask my friend that I had already asked the question to.
Good.
So the question was this. So we had 2, 4, 6 shots to be fired in tact sequence, so 1, 1, 2, 1, 1 at the first 3 targets.
Okay. There was actually three in the initial array. Okay.
And
each to be engaged twice.
And then, engage them twice. So I burned 6 rounds.
Right.
I got 5 in the gun.
Okay.
I go uprange to the barrel to position 2. I've got to fire 6 more shots.
Mm-hmm.
I can't cross that opening without firing all 6 shots. Is that correct?
You can't cross the opening until you've engaged the targets available through the opening.
Interesting.
So,
okay, so
if there's 3 targets, you have to shoot. You have to engage those 3 targets before you cross
engage.
The port.
Shoot.
So you want to shoot 5?
To shoot.
You want to shoot 5, cross, reload, and fire the 6th shot?
Can I not do that?
That's an interesting question.
Because you said engage.
Yeah.
Means shot at the target.
I was actually on the IDPA forum today looking at some rules discussions. And there's one school of thought that says you've completed the engagement when you've put the minimum required number of rounds on the target.
Okay.
So in this case, if you're to engage each target twice, you can't cross that port
without
until you engage each one
twice.
With 2. You have to complete the engagement.
Now, that question I just brought up, or you brought it up right now. My actual question at the time was, can I fire those 6 shots and go ahead and do a tack load on my way to position 2 So then from position two, I go 2, 4, 6, haul up to position three, and right. go 7, 8, 9, maybe 10, mm-hmm. and be done.
Right.
Now, I was told that I couldn't, what was the deal? It was something to do with the first three targets. I was still exposed to those three targets, even though I've shot them each twice. And I can't really be reloading from the open because I'm open yes. to those targets.
I would not use that justification for requiring you to... They wanted you to reload before you left?
Well,
or just not reload while you're in the doorway?
They didn't want me to do it.
Do what?
I asked, can I shoot the first six shots
right.
and then reload before I get to position two? And they said right. no.
Okay. If I were presented with that, I would do what they told me.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
I was a new guy. I just wanted to do... And now I'm asking you, conceptually, or yes. by the rules,
the argument that once you've engaged the threats, completed the engagement of the threats, they're no longer threats. And so, if there are no threats visible, technically you are covered. So as soon as you fired that sixth shot, you should have been able to begin your reload immediately as you move to the next position.
That's what I wanted to do instead of firing five and then doing my right. reload at the barrel.
Right.
And,
but I would say again,
static reload.
Sometimes you'll find a procedure that says the places where you're allowed to reload are here, here, and here.
Okay.
And then you follow the procedure.
And when it says that.
Yeah. You can argue whether it's right or not, but if that's the procedure, I don't think you're going to get anywhere with your argument.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue that.
If the procedure did not include where and when to reload, right. I'd say as soon as you fired that sixth shot, get to reloading.
I could have
switched out the mag. But if the procedure says don't, for whatever reason, I mean, the person who designed it might have had some tactical theory in mind. They may have been thinking, who knows? Who knows what they were thinking? But I would say if the procedure says don't reload until you get here, don't reload until you get there.
Gotcha. Well, anyhow, I was hoping to be able to do that, and I just said, all right, fine, I'll just do it your way.
Yeah, and I've done it both ways. I mean, I've designed stages and done it both ways, and I've shot stages that required you to do it both ways, and it's just, it's you're going to find it done every which way. So I would say going into it with a philosophy that you insist on is just going to make you unhappy. So when the procedure says do this, just do it, as long as it's not contrary to the rules. If somebody says... fire eight shots on the move. The rules say be revolver neutral. Something could be required that's contrary to the rules, and then speak up. But if it's one of these things, it's just sort of like a wrinkle that somebody has put in there, rather than arguing why, just do it.
Yeah, that's exactly the way I took it. I just, however, I'm playing your game. I'm not going to come and crash the party.
But it should be a matter.
But I asked the question, because, it's a game. I want to game it. I'm a gamer.
What are the rules?
What are the rules? Let me do it. I'm going to play
reload here.
I want to play within the rules. So, anyway.
Yeah.
All right. So, we'll go on to stage one. And this one, we'll go ahead and watch now. I'll narrate to Rick. It'll be pretty obvious. We start facing up range, turn and draw, shoot on the move, the first three targets. There you go.
Yeah, nicely done.
I thought it was all right. It was fun.
Yeah.
I think I did it right. I shot on the move the first three targets.
Right.
And then you could hear from the shots, there was three more targets, 2, 4, 6, plus one popper.
Mm-hmm. Now, I noticed because you're right-handed and you're engaging on the move from left to right, that's a little bit more difficult than going the other direction. I notice you're squared to the target and kind of crossing your feet as you go.
Yeah.
And the general kind of conventional wisdom is don't cross your feet when you're moving. But at the same time, you almost, when you're moving essentially backwards for a right-handed shooter, you almost have the sense of moving backwards
when you're
moving from left to right. Yeah.
Right.
And that's the way I feel when I'm moving from right to left. If you're moving in the natural direction, you can kind of point your feet in the direction you want to go and just turn your upper body. But if you're shooting kind of across the grain, it almost has a sensation of backing up while you're doing it. And so it's something that it's just, it's a technique that's different that you have to kind of work on. And it's just, as I'm watching you, I'm looking at him going, well, he's kind of crossing his feet. But it's hard not to when you're kind of going backwards.
Otherwise, it'd be kind of twisted up.
Yeah, you can't twist your upper body around, you know, 180 degrees so your feet are pointing in the wrong direction, you know.
Sure.
So it's just one of those things. It's just a technique that's a little bit different. And that's one of those things that, as a right-handed shooter, you probably won't see nearly as much going left to right as I, as a left-handed shooter, see going right to left.
Gotcha.
But it's just, you know, the technique is going to be a little bit different because you're trying to engage as you move across, mm-hmm. and the direction you're traveling is kind of backwards for your handedness.
Gotcha.
But the other stuff, you know, the use of cover, you know, all this, the reloads and stuff, you know, good.
Yeah, felt good. I liked it. It was fun. That was a fun stage. Stage two, this is the last stage we shot of the day, and this has a, for me is a bit of an unusual start. This was a shot for retention.
Okay, yeah.
At a target with a big hole in it.
Right.
So, I fired, I think I fired three, and then I was, we were supposed to engage the next target on the move, and I think my first shot on this second target, my first shot was shot flat-footed, so okay. I got penalized for that.
Penalized for that.
And
now you're specifically told, though, to shoot the retention shot flat-footed, right? You couldn't move
yes.
until that was
yes.
that was done.
Absolutely
yeah.
true.
Right.
And then and then we're supposed to be on the move for this second target. Mm-hmm. And then here you see I'm crowding cover big time.
That's not so bad.
No, I don't think. I mean,
that's not bad.
I mean, I'm sticking the gun past the wall. Is that not?
That's one of those tactical things where the guys will say, "Oh,
well,
you know."
I'm not
apart from that,
of the...
it didn't look bad because you know when you're right-handed shooting around the left side, you're going to be in a less comfortable position.
For sure.
Than shooting
around the
right
side. I feel like I'm bending at the wrist.
Yes.
You know, to kind of get around that corner instead of
One of the things that I notice is that as I'm shooting at more and more of an angle, the gun tends to start to lean over.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed, especially when I was shooting, I noticed it especially at the state championship match last year when I was shooting my compact gun, that once I rotate it beyond about 45 degrees, I will miss a popper that I'm aiming at dead center. I mean, it's like the angle of the gun throws the impact point off
that much.
There's
good reason for that, yeah.
And so you want to try to keep the gun vertical, but I've found myself, you know, in this totally unnatural grip, trying to rotate the gun vertically, and I feel like I'm wasting time trying to get my gun vertical rather than shooting.
Well, just go ahead and take a shot.
Yeah, and so there's some different things to learn from shooting around cover, but I'd say in that demonstration of this last stage, you actually look pretty good. You were contorted to a much greater extent on the first stage you shot.
Okay, interesting, interesting. Well, so that was my first IDPA match. Certainly not my last. I think maybe I might be the newest IDPA member right now. Who knows?
What's your number?
Ooh, I have to pull it out.
Oh, he hasn't memorized his member number.
Golly, I don't know. Let's see, member number. Let's see, Walmart cards. Here you go.
What are we? 55847. So 55, almost 56,000. Mine is 7876.
7876. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm 48,000 after you.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
So glad you had fun.
It was fun. Literally, this was a stunt for the show. I was like, we'll do this. We'll line it up. We'll do it one time. Rick will coach me through my first match. It'll be a fun episode, and then I'll get back to my USPSA.
Right.
I honestly can't wait to get out there again and do it.
Good. There's a match
also,
next Saturday.
I got to say that since joining, I said, well, now I got to get classified. So I dragged three of my SO friends to the range, and we set up the classifier match, and we shot it, and I made expert.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, and that's one of the interesting things about classification is now that you've shot it, tell me how you feel about this. There's a certain kind of rule of thumb among some shooters that if you look at the classifications in USPSA and IDPA, there's five of each, and that you actually should be kind of one ahead
in IDPA. Right, so
if you're an A-class shooter, you should be a master.
Right.
And why aren't you a master?
There's no way. I barely made it. I was 2.5 seconds into the expert zone.
Right.
So I got to shave another 20 seconds or something like that to make master. Yeah. So I'm barely an A class, so I should be barely a master at IDPA, right? In theory, but
I have found. I mean, I've been running people through the classifier for over 10 years, and in my experience, the classifications align pretty well.
Oh, they do. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think
master, A to expert.
Yeah, it depends on what your skill set is, essentially. I mean, I was running a master class shooter through the classifier. He'd never shot it before. And after shooting the first string and there's some strategies about shooting the classifier, and a lot of them are you should try never to drop any points on the first stage. You want to get maximum points because the targets are so close.
Yeah.
Well, this guy had dropped in the first three strings, he dropped like 10 points because he's shooting like an El Press.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, you're going to be a marksman here if you don't settle down and get your hit.
Right.
And so I think how you approach it has a lot to do with it. But yeah, I find, I mean, I'm just barely an expert, but I'm halfway between B class and master in USPSA. And
halfway
so,
between B and master?
Well, I'm in the middle of A class.
So you're A, okay.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of A class. Yeah. And so, you know, you would say, well, if you're in the middle of A class, then you should easily be an IDPA master. But the skill sets and how you employ your skills in the two venues are just enough different that you're not going to see the standard breakdown the way some people think you will.
And the guns are different, you know? I mean, if I was running my Glock 35 all tricked out with a magwell and dropping mags all over the place and whatever else, but you know, like I said, this is bone stock, and I had a blast shooting it. I mean, you know, picked up some of the Rainier 124s, found a little recipe.
Now what powder, what was the, you don't have to divulge your charge weight, but what powder were you using?
I use Ramshot Competition almost exclusively for 9 and 40. I mean, I've loaded, I don't know, 30,000 rounds of 40, but I've loaded less than 1,000 rounds of 9 in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's going to change too.
Oh yeah, but now I don't know, some years ago I loaded some 9 and I found a recipe at 3.5 grains or something like that that mm-hmm. seemed to do the trick for a minor load. And so
cool.
They go bang, they hit the target. I'm happy. So,
all right. Well, we'll be bringing more IDPA action to you in the future. Cool. Larry looks like he's unstoppable now, so he'll be dragging me out to the range.
Yeah, let's go.
We'll do more
play in the rain.
Right. So, do we have a trivia question?
Ah, oh, man. I didn't come prepared with one, did you?
I can come up with one real quick. All right. So this week's trivia question involves an equipment question in both USPSA and IDPA. The scenario is you're shooting a match, and let's say you normally have a set of XS big dot sights on your gun, which is a large white dot for a front sight, and then kind of an express rifle style wide V,
real wide V
for the rear notch. And normally those sights are thought of as kind of defensive sights used for somewhat rough, quick acquisition speed shooting. You realize that the next stage that you're going to shoot is a 50 yard standard, and you think, oh man, I don't want those big dot sights on there. So you run over to the safety area, get out your screwdriver, and install a nice set of square rear notch sights with a nice narrow front post, perfect for that 50 yard precision shot. And the question is it legal in the middle of the match to take your old sights off the gun and replace them with sights that are not just like the ones that were on the gun to start with?
Right. So two separate answers.
Yeah, you got to look up both.
Answer it from the IDPA perspective, answer it from the USPSA perspective. Get them both. Is it both?
Got to get them both right.
Get them both to be entered in the drawing this week.
Dig up, and the rule books are both available online. Yep. So no whining about, oh, I'm not a USPSA member, so I don't have a rule book.
Right.
Just look it up, and it's in there.
USPSA.org, and then click on the NROI tab, and it'll take you to the rule book.
And IDPA.com, right on the homepage, just on the left side, it'll say something like
information. It says about IDPA, and then
a little menu will open up, and it says rule book.
Yep.
Just go ahead and look it up. What's the answer?
Right. And you're going to win five.
My wonderful prizes, Bob Pardo.
Yeah. We've got another certificate for 500 Rainier Ballistics bullets of your choice. We'll send you the certificate. Man. So I want to make sure I tell you the prize now to make sure that you guys want to do the legwork
properly.
Right?
So, well, yeah. And the incentive, you know, bullets are flying off the shelves. You know, this prize might be more valuable than you believe by the time the answer comes out.
No kidding. No kidding about that. So anyway, thanks for watching my first IDPA match. Had a lot of fun. Like I said, thanks for welcoming me to IDPA. All
you are
of
welcome.
Our viewers and Rick, thanks everybody very much.
All right. So, and until next week, have fun, shoot straight.
We'll see you again. And check us out at our website.
Powerfactorshow.com.
And the email?
The email address, powerfactorshow@gmail.com.
Facebook.com/powerfactorshow, and go ahead, YouTube Power Factor Show as well.
All
thanks.
Right.